Swirling dervishes of smoke arose into the eternal starlight. In the silence, they fed paper offerings of abandoned dreams and lost loves into the Sang burner. Tibetan butter lamps were lit with wishes for the new year. Their orange warmth flickered in orderly rows behind sliding glass protected from the rising winds. Returning to the cocoon of the shrine room, they settled on their cushions. The singing bowl was clear and pure. Buddhist masters looked down from the walls, bestowing kindness. The retreat centre was a Mediterranean white, perched high on the bare cliff top, wrapped in Scots pine, rowan and ash. Wind funneled the sea spray up the mountainside, causing the building to emit unearthly sounds, but it remained steadfast, a place of refuge and prayer. Monks in their saffron robes appeared and disappeared. Eileen gazed across the ocean's abyss, the spaciousness illuminated at intervals by the beam of a distant lighthouse. Her hair was grey and cropped, her handsome face remarkably unlined. She sat upright, poised for meditation. The New Year sitting was guided by a man who had meditated for a lifetime. His delivery was that of a weather forecaster, measured and reassuring, nothing sensational, as he unfolded the path to inner peace and happiness. She had never given her daughter a name. Even after 3 weeks of holding her, feeling her warm body tucked into hers, the little heart beating rapidly. She had placed her in the cot, stroked her downy head, breathing in all the baby milky aromas, and walked out of her life. Back home up north, it wasn't long before Eileen needed space from her family with their clipped words and narrow vision. She buried the baby deep in the recesses of her heart and never told a soul about the child she had brought into the world. Later, in London, she cut herself adrift, relishing the vastness and possibilities. She lost herself for a while, dabbled in drink and had brief liaisons. She married John, tall, with a soft beard, and eventually they went to live in Belfast, where he worked in hotels. The recent letter from Dublin was an invasion, an intrusion, one that Eileen had hoped would never happen. With grim determination, she sealed up the fissure that had appeared. The only contact with her daughter would be in the preserve of troubled dreams. From the mother and child home, a priest placed the baby with a loving family who'd always wanted a child of their own. They had a weeping willow in their garden and a small curly poodle. In the soft spring days, she lay outside in her pram, the dog beside her, both gazing at the tree's gentle dance and whispering leaves. They named her Carol. Her parents loved and nurtured her, relishing her spirit and encouraging her endeavours. A little brother soon arrived and folded into the family. Carol was almost happy. She was tall and had a shock of red hair which resisted styling. She was curious, open, friendly, a determined explorer. From under the weeping willow, she branched out in different directions, drawn first to the magic of Japan, its Shinto shrines, bamboo forests and rice paddies. She was an object of curiosity for the young students in their sailor's attire. They plucked samples of her hair and studied her, stifling giggles behind dark fringes. She worked for a while in Africa, with farmers in Zambia and refugees in Darfur. On her last evening in Sudan, a Cholo sang his ancestors' songs to her on the banks of the White Nile. In Palestine, she skipped with the children and sipped sweet tea in the village of shepherds and olive groves. The Jewish settlers came from the colonies in their white shirts, armed with guns and biblical hatred. She stood firm and photographed their threats. She had a love of nature and a need for solitude. Once she climbed Croagh-Patrick and witnessed her silhouette illuminated in a rainbow across Clew Bay. She didn't try to capture it on film. Instead, she imprinted the intensely beautiful moment on her heart. Early childhood memories were filled with West of Ireland summers, fishing nets and shimmering rock pools, hard-boiled eggs and cold sausages stowed in picnic baskets. They took a boat to Skellig Vihil one year. Carl and her mum climbed up among the soaring gannets to the beehive huts, while her dad and younger brother waited below, the climb too strenuous for little legs. She felt deeply the huge loss of her mum, who had died too young and was now far away on a distant shore. They hadn't had time to become friends and share life as adults, something Carol was truly sorry for. Every Christmas with her dad, looking out across the lake at the whooper swans, they would cry briefly when Adeste Fideles was sung, their hearts breaking a little. Apart from glimpses, love mostly evaded Carol. There were significant men in her life, but none that were the right fit to accompany her on life's meandering journey. Her friendships, both fleeting and long-lasting, sustained her. Unquestioning love from people she had known forever or who had recently stepped into her life. One September, with time on her hands, Carol found herself in the general register's office. Surrounded by Americans fishing for Irish roots, she opened the thick red tomes. Line by line, she ran her finger down the columns, dates of birth for little Amons and Owens, Sinéads and Siobhans. Never-ending records of lives once new, all the districts of birth, mother's maiden names, registrar signatures officially scrawled. Just as the research room was about to close, one entry caught her attention. Unlike the thousands before, the empty spaces stood starkly on the page. On the day of Carol's birth, a child was born in Dublin with no name. The father too was nameless, without a dwelling place, a rank or a profession. Her mother was called Eileen. A copy of the birth certificate was carelessly run off and presented to her without ceremony. Outside by the grey river, the wind whipped the steel of Butt Bridge and city dwellers clutched scarves and umbrellas. The heavens had shifted, yet the world remained the same. Having waited years for a meeting with social workers, Carol, armed with the fruits of her investigation, presented herself to the authorities. Alarmed that she might continue her solo search, the case file was finally opened. The information was scant. The file itself was never brought into the room, left on a desk away from Carol's prying eyes. The social worker was rotund and efficient, with a tight cardigan. The family meeting room was set for a bigger gathering in a large circle. Sitting a little too far away, the non-identifying facts were carefully dispensed. Each piece of information felt significant, no matter how minute, and reverberated through Carl. Seismic waves washing up on remote strands of her mind for weeks and months. Eileen was from north of the border. She'd given birth at 21, not all that young. She'd stayed in the mother and child home on the Navan Road for 3 weeks with her baby. 3 whole weeks together with her birth mother, with Eileen. There were no birth complications despite her early arrival. Eileen had moved to London shortly after the birth, returning only to sign the adoption order before the judge. She'd been in a typing pool and lived in the flatlands of Terenure. Carol pictured the house with a fine red brick facade and ample bay windows, a huge cedar tree in the garden, lino laid carelessly on the floor. She might even have cycled past the very house, the place where Eileen had lived all those years ago, and where perhaps she had been conceived. That was all. No medical records, no details about the father, her father. as if he'd hurriedly deposited his material and then rushed off. No note of any kind from Eileen to her daughter. She must have hoped that this day would never come. After 40 years, a whole lifetime, it was surprising they found Eileen so swiftly. She hadn't fallen on hard times in London, as the social worker had warned was a possibility. She hadn't passed away early, something Carol had been anxious about. She was back in Portrush, with its stiff sea air and clipped words. The first letter from the social worker was met with silence. The second, gently requesting a response, elicited an abrupt phone call. Barely concealing her anger, Eileen instructed no further contact whatsoever. She didn't want to know her child's name or anything else about her. She had vowed never to disturb the sadness submerged all those years ago. It wasn't shame, more a sense of fear, a fear of unravelling. There were no further meetings in the family room, and Carol cried quietly in Harold's Cross when told of Eileen's stony reaction. Slowly she gathered herself up and walked by the sea among the whimbrels and kittiwakes, footprints melting in the wet sand. She rescued a long-legged puppy and poured kindness into her. She considered tracking Eileen down, of watching her from the shadows, but there was also an acceptance of a door closing, of respecting someone else's wishes and fears. It had been the worst storm in 20 years. The prayer flags dangled, dripping, shredded by the wind, blessings scattered to faraway shores. The coast had been pounded, trees snapped, rocks and seaweed strewn on high ground. Although battered, the land seemed rejuvenated, glistening and new. Wild birds reclaimed their favoured branches, smart and unruffled, having survived in their sheltered solitude. The air pealed with their exchanged songs and stories. Eileen breathed deeply as the New Year's sun rose over the headland. It was wrong to go digging for a child laid almost to rest a lifetime ago. The Buddhist teachings were not really her cup of tea. Eileen had never sought happiness. Now, after many years, she merely wanted to still her mind, to gain respite from its noise. She had ventured on her first retreat a few months earlier. In spite of her suspicion of anything with a whiff of incense, the retreat had provided a sense of quiet for her spirit. For the first time in her life, she was invited just to be. Just to sit. To bring her mind home and allow it to settle. So simple. So kind. January's brightness spread further over the bay. Carol allowed herself to rest in her confusion, safe in the cliff-top shrine room, soaking up the beauty around her. She thought rarely of her birth mother now, more concerned with her own receding dreams of motherhood. During this retreat, however, her mother's name, Eileen, the very idea of her kept arising. What would she look like? What would she say to her? All she had ever wanted during the years of searching was to meet her eyes and to say, "Thank you." Nothing else was needed. The sun caressed her, and she felt the warmth softening her thoughts. Eileen had observed Carol, quietly confident, claiming the same sunny space by the window. Eileen hadn't spoken to many people over the past few days, the periods of silence creating a welcome space for contemplation. She hadn't noticed the woman's name. But now, in the radiance, she opened her heart towards Carol, sending her rays of loving kindness. "May you be happy. May you be well."
That was Happiness by Hilary Minch, read by Barbara Nicklieve, one of the 25 finalists of the Frances McManus Short Story Competition. Tomorrow night at the same time, you can hear Reminiscence, An Ice Age, An Otter and an Eel by Paul McMahona.